I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who lived to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Final segment of Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. And we talk with Carl Calabrese about all the happenings around Western New York, New York, and the country, and the world. As we do on every Friday, Carl Calabrese is here. Carl, happy Friday.
Same to you, Joe. This is 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row, Carl, and I'm honored to be here, and we've got to start on Capitol Hill yesterday, Elise Stefanik and Governor Kathy Hochul. Your thoughts on how that all broke down? And I mean, does Elise Stefanik have a chance if this becomes the race in 26?
Oh, sure, she's got a chance. And I tell you, I thought she made mincemeat of Kathy Hochul yesterday at that hearing. I mean, to ask her those questions about illegal immigrants and the horrible, horrendous crimes they committed. And, you know, the governor had no clue who they were. I mean, it was embarrassing. I've said for a long time, Joe, I think this governor is way out of her weight class in this position. And yesterday's hearing certainly showed that. It also showed how combative Elise Stefanik is. And that's exactly the kind of attitude and temperament you need if you're going to run against an entrenched incumbent in a very blue state of New York. But boy, she certainly is feisty, and I said to my wife, I'd love to see these two have a stand-up hour and a half debate during a gubernatorial race. So, you know, we'll see. Lee Zeldin came very, very close to beating Kathy Hochul based on the crime issue. If that election season had gone another week or so, he may very well have pulled it out because all the trends were moving in his direction. Now, we don't know what the predominant issue is going to be in the next gubernatorial election. Will it be crime? Maybe. Illegal immigration? Maybe. Maybe all of the above. But she is certainly the kind of standard bearer a out-of-party power wants to have in an election. I think she's shown now twice. She showed it with the very tough questioning of the presidents of, what was it, Yale, Harvard, and I think it was Pittsburgh, I think, that led to the resignations of at least two out of the three, maybe all three. Very tough questioner, and we saw it again yesterday at that congressional hearing.
You know, Kathy Hochul, in that she talked about how the state, you know, will work with ICE in certain situations. I mean, to this point, I just don't understand, Carl, how anyone can believe that when they see the proof of what, you know, what has happened in New York State with illegals.
You can't have it both ways. You can't proclaim this a sanctuary state and New York City a sanctuary city, but say, oh, we're fully cooperating with ICE. The two are absolutely contradictory. And this state has proven that it is a sanctuary state and is not going to do anything to lift a finger to assist the feds in finding these people and deporting these people. And, you know, they talk one game and then they do something else. Actions always speak louder than words. The Democrats always like to sound like Republicans when they're running for office, and yet when they get into office, they become progressive leftists. And I think we saw part of that yesterday with Kathy Hochul proclaiming how supportive she is with ICE, but we know what the real policies are in this state and how she reacts to situations where cooperation would be needed. She doesn't. That's the problem.
Talking about the election, I've been saying this all week. You know, right before Election Day in November, Kamala Harris, all of a sudden, she cared about the border. You know, it was in her commercials talking about strength and strong borders. And now I think we would see what would have happened if Kamala Harris was elected. I mean, it's one thing up to Election Day, and now it's back to the same talking points that we had for, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it should be no surprise. This is, you know, Democrats, as I said, like to sound like Republicans when they're running for office, and then they govern from the left when they achieve office. And that's going to continue. It's been a fairly successful playbook for them over the years. But I think people have finally caught up with the game. And boy, I'll tell you, I keep following the the prospects of the Democrat Party with public opinion. And just when you think it couldn't sink any lower, another poll comes out that shows that it indeed has sunk lower. And as long as they continue to support illegals, to support violence, to try to cover up violence, continue to pick the 20% of the 80-20 issues, they're going to continue to fall. And they've learned nothing. And so that goes for the media as well. I mean, you would think the media would have learned from the summer of 2020, the BLM summer. They shouldn't say it's mostly peaceful or any variation of those words, and yet they're still doing it. They're still doing it. You know, it takes, you got to listen closely, but I mean, they describe what everyone sees as chaos, they say are demonstrations. What everyone sees as arsonists, they say are anti-ICE protesters. What everyone sees as just anarchy, they say they're lawful protests with some unrest. I mean, you know, even the mayor of Los Angeles says things in L.A. are calm. Well, you know, American people are seeing exactly the opposite. And yet the media and Democrats continue to try to tell us, don't believe what your eyes see and your ears hear. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. They continue to do that. They continue to fall in the eyes of the public. They continue to lose voters. They continue to lose new voters in terms of registration and party affiliation. But, you know, one of these days they're going to wake up. Everything swings different. You know, pendulum always swings in politics. And one of these days they will wake up. But for the short term anyways, I don't see it.
You know, that display yesterday, Senator Alex Padilla barging in to Kristi Noem's press conference, and then the coordinated responses by everyone on the political left. And like you said, Carl, I think a majority of Americans look at that and go, well, what did you think was going to happen?
Well, Joe, I mean, here's a guy. He's a new senator. He's only been in office since late January. Okay, he's a freshman senator. He's a low key guy to begin with. So nobody really knows who he is. To add to that, he shows up in street clothes, jeans, sneakers, windbreaker, and no senator identification, no badge, no lanyard, nothing like that. And then he starts to rush the podium where a cabinet speaker is speaking. And he's shouting. When police try to stop him, he starts pushing back. You know, and it was obvious if you watch that, he wants to get to that podium. Now, these law enforcement officers, they don't know who this guy is. We live in dangerous times. There's been two attempts on the president's life. Now some guy is rushing and the podium to get to a cabinet secretary and yelling, and now starts pushing back on police officers. I'll tell you, anybody who does that, you, me, or anybody listening to this, you start acting like that in public and then start resisting police and pushing back, guaranteed you're going to be wearing handcuffs. Guaranteed. Because cops don't want to get hurt either. And so the first thing they need to do is make sure you are incapable of hurting the target you were going after and them. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. But then all of the Democrats in unison, starting with Chuck Schumer, this is terrible. This is more evidence of Trump coming after us. They're going to arrest all of us. And I mean, it's a bizarre response because, as you said, Joe, people watch that and they said, this guy's supposed to be a U.S. senator acting like this? I tell you, it's like just when you think Trump derangement syndrome couldn't get any more jaw-dropping, we saw it yesterday with Senator Padilla.
And I think we'll see it on display tomorrow, and Carl.
And one other thing. I noticed there was one of the press conferences had 10 or 12 of the most far-left progressive Democrats in the House, giving, you know, the usual Trump's a Nazi, he's going to take over America and all this stuff. And guess who was standing with him? Our own Tim Kennedy.
Of course. Well, they told him to be there and be there and read this. And, you know, he followed suit.
Really?
Carl, coast to coast tomorrow, we're having the No King protest. We're having several here, one downtown, one in Williamsville, the Tonawandas. I mean, you talk about TDS. When I see these things, and I should be more fair to the people who are going, but to me, I just see as I didn't get my way in November and I'm still upset about it.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. You know, let's go back to 2016 and remember all of the protests that occurred across the country when Trump got elected. Oh, there were so many. There's so many different themes. You know, women with the funny hats and, you know, I can't even recall all of the different themes. But there had to be at least a half a dozen different protest themes in those protests. Now, what did they accomplish? did not change one policy from Donald Trump's administration. He didn't respond to it in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it just puts that image out of the Democrats being the party associated with disorder, chaos, lawlessness, riots, protests, violence. And, you know, what we're seeing now is a coordinated effort. There's no question about it. You saw the news the other night where a van pulls up and it starts distributing face shields out of boxes. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident. Somebody paid for that. Somebody directed that van to that protest. I've seen videos of people on television saying they were paid $100 to $200 a day to protest. So this is an organized effort. It's getting more and more violent. You see the images of these guys with sledgehammers breaking up curbs so they can throw the concrete chips at police officers. They throw frozen water bottles at officers. I think, Joe, their ultimate goal is they're looking for violence to produce another George Floyd, that they can all rally around and create the same kind of atmosphere and demonstrations you saw in the summer of 2020. I hope it doesn't get to that level, but I think that's their ultimate goal. They want another George Floyd summer.
Carl, Israel strikes Iran last night. I was saying it was another, this whole week, I was planning to go to bed early, bank all the sleep with filling in for David and for Tom. And instead, you had the LA protest. And then now, last night, this kept me up. Your thoughts on the action itself and the response from the administration?
You know, you have to just shake your head in amazement and admiration for Israel. You had to do it when they sabotaged all of those pagers with Hamas leadership, which then blew up in people's pockets. And now you see, they pretty much took out the Iranian air defenses in their last major strike. So they just about have complete air dominance. So I think what you're seeing now is the Israelis going after what little remains of that air defense system, plus going after the missiles that could be launched at Israel and cause mass casualties. And then once you clear the skies and you clear the retaliatory threat, now it's open game, open field on these nuclear facilities, which they're already hitting. I think it's going to be a while. I think Trump was quite clear that he gave them 60 days, the Iranians, he gave 60 days to make a deal. Well, it's 61 days yesterday, and you saw what happened. I always thought, Joe, that we weren't going to do it, but we're going to tell the Israelis, go ahead, now you can. And I think that's when we reached 61 days, and the Iranians not only didn't sign a deal, but their rhetoric got even more belligerent about their intention of making nuclear bombs. I'm hearing and reading that the Iranians may have very well been within 30 days of producing upwards of 9 atomic weapons. You know Israel is not going to sit by and wait for that to happen. They can't. They can't afford it. And so, you know, they did what Israel has always done. They've protected their self-interest. They protected their own survival. And this is going to continue. But just an incredible military response. I think it's also evident that they've got support. Intelligence assets within the Iranian government and culture that's helping them identify where the leadership is at any given time. That's quite obvious. And the other thing I question, Joe, is, you know, the conventional wisdom in the media and the press is that Israel needs our bunker-busting bombs to get to these underground facilities. I really question that, that Israel, which has always taken its own national defense very seriously and has always been cognizant of not being reliant on another power for its survival. And knowing that you had to have these kinds of weapons to get to these underground facilities over many years, and that the only country up to this point has been the United States that possesses those weapons, I can't believe they just sat by and said, well, we got to hope America gives us those bombs. I think they produced them, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if in the coming weeks we hear that they're dropping their own version of bunker-busting bombs and getting into these underground facilities.
Oh, yeah. More to come of that. Carl, as we bring it back here to Buffalo, at 12 o'clock, Garnell Whitfield joined me to talk about his campaign. Early voting starts tomorrow. You know, obviously, a lot of this Buffalo mayoral talk is around Scanlon and around Sean Ryan. But do you think that the setting is there for a potential upset in this primary?
No. No, I don't. I think the two main players are Scanlon and Ryan, and that's where the contest is going to be. I think of the right now of the three challengers, the other three challengers, the one that has raised the most money is Garnell Whitfield. He's ahead of Rashid Wyatt, which kind of surprises me a little bit. But Rashid Wyatt's advantage is that he's got a base. He's got a council district that he's represented for some time now. He's got people that have volunteered for him, that have voted for him. And I think he's got his base of support, which probably costs Ryan those votes if Wyatt was not in the race. But no, this is going to be a two-person race.
You know, looking at the general election, the Republicans are running James Gardner for the first time in a decade. They have someone on the ballot. Do you think, if you're in the city of Buffalo, a Republican, a right of center-minded person, is that the right way to go? Or do you leave it empty and try to support someone? Because a lot of these candidates in the primary are going to run in the general on a different line.
You know, you can't build a party, Joe, without running candidates. Okay, so every cycle that the Republican Party does not field candidates for mayor or council or any other citywide position, it's another year where the party doesn't begin any type of comeback at all. So if you're serious about rebuilding a party in the city, you've got to run candidates, and especially for mayor, because it's such a high profile position. It's a heavy lift. There's no question about it. But again, you know, across the country, more and more people are leaving the Democrat Party, minorities, young people. But it's not happening here. And I think part of the reason is because the Republican Party has not exploited those issues that are causing that exodus from the Democrat Party. If I was advising a Republican mayoral candidate for the city of Buffalo, I would concentrate on just overall economic situation of Buffalo. There are many other Rust Belt cities like Buffalo that are far outpacing us with economic growth and jobs. I would concentrate on crime. I've heard some real, these are anecdotal, but I've heard some real horror stories recently from Buffalo residents about crime in their neighborhoods. And I would concentrate on schools and school choice, especially with minorities. Nationwide, this has proven to be a very popular issue with minority voters, of giving them the choice to send their kids to a school that actually produces a student who can read, write, and do arithmetic. And I would concentrate on those three issues and see what happens. So you got to start somewhere. And I think you start A, by running a candidate, B, picking the right issues. And in my opinion, those three would be a good start in making headway with voters.
I mean, I know we're talking mayor, but if you look in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, I mean, he's sitting in that seat because he focused on schools.
No question. That was his. That's what delivered his race at the end. He was trailing in that race all throughout the summer and early fall. And then when Terry McAuliffe made that mistake at a debate saying parents have no say in their education of their kids, it's up to teachers and administrators, that was the turning point in that race. Youngkin picked that up and ran it home to a victory.
Yesterday, Carl, I was in for Tom, and I was talking about this graph. It shows the diversity of thought between the political left and the political right. And to me, it wasn't surprising that the political right has a wider diversity than the political left. I put this on my social media, and every liberal I went to high school with that hasn't talked to me in 20 years came out of the woodwork and was commenting on this. That's not right. How could you say that? Obviously, this is fake news. But Carl, I look at that. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious when you follow politics like we do.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, the diversity of opinions on the left is very narrow, because if you stray from the orthodoxy, if you stray from the progressive left conventional wisdom, you not only get hammered, you get destroyed. You can't question the basic tenets of progressive leftism anymore. You know, that men are men and women are women, that people should be allowed to keep more of their hard-earned money, that we should have a strong national defense, that criminals should be locked up. You know, you can't question those things without really having the wrath of the left come down on you. And so consequently, people just, for the most part, either adopt those positions in their heads and hearts, or they just shut up. They just don't say anything for fear of alienating the left. But there's no question about it. The left is committed to an orthodoxy, and they use whatever tool they can to promote it, including censorship. We saw that in the Biden administration, even going back to the Obama administration with Lois Lerner at the IRS trying to shut down conservative organizations from participating in the election. And then you had Biden with his attempts to get social media to censor conservative thought. So, you know, everything the left accuses Republicans and conservatives of doing, they do themselves and have been doing for a while.
Carl Calabrese, you hear him every Friday at 1 o'clock. Carl, these last 2 weeks have been great. I always look forward to talking to you.
Same here, Joe. Have a great weekend.
And that was Carl Calabrese. And that is Hardline for this Father's Day, Sunday, June 15th, 2025. My thanks to Dave Leventhal, Garnell Whitfield, Avi Israel, Chris Collins, and Carl Calabrese. If you missed any of the show, you can find it on demand at WBEN.com and on the Odyssey app. I'll be back here tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. as I continue to fill in for Tom Bowerly. Hope you have a great Sunday. Happy Father's Day. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 on News Radio 930 WBEN.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who lived to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.